Credo gets the last laugh in Austin, and now the world considers LSU a legit national championship contender. We're just 2 weeks in. The Raging Cajuns get back to doing what they do, run the football, send Hugh Freeze back to Liberty. The Saints can make it a hat trick if they can get it done tonight, Monday, September 9th, 2019.
First and 10 at the 21. Two receivers right, two to the left. Burrow again, a shotgun snap. Fires this time. Going up for it, Justin Jefferson. He's got it in the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers! 21-yard touchdown pass. Second of the night for Jefferson. Second of the night for Burrow. And with 47 seconds before the half, the Tigers extend their lead 19-7 over the Texas Longhorns. Again, Texas trying to hide, whether it's a blitz or they drop back to cover. Regular rush. Burrow throws, has a man open, middle of the end zone. It's going to be Terrace Marshall. Touchdown, Tigers! 26-yard touchdown strike to start the fourth quarter. It's 29-21 LSU. They'll line up, take the snap, take the knee. Favorite play in the playbook. And that's going to do it here from Austin. The final second's going to roll off the clock, and head coach Ed Orgeron and his Tigers do something LSU has never done. Non-conference opponent on the road, ranked in the top 10, and they get the victory tonight as the horn sounds, and this one is in the books. Tigers win over the Longhorns, 45-38 on a Saturday night in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, I felt especially the quarterback and the receivers that we have. But you know what? The calling with Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady and the game planning was phenomenal. And they had them. They felt like they could look over and get us in the right play according to the coverage they did. They did it so many times. But you know what? Give the plays, the credit to our players. The plays that they make were phenomenal.
And good afternoon. And after that statement win that the whole country got to see, 45-38, LSU climbed two spots to number four in the Associated Press top 25. They moved up one spot to number five in the coaches' poll. My personal poll has LSU at number three. Clemson and Alabama, simply on reputation, LSU's played a much more daunting schedule and played better than Georgia and everybody else, but that's just me. Ooh, baby. Good afternoon. CD back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios, bringing you the sound, bringing you the emotion. We got a busy, busy day planned for you and yours, and the Saints will cap it all off tonight on Monday Night Football. If they can get that win over the Houston Texans, it'll be a clean sweep. Tigers get it done in the air. Three receivers over 100 yards. The triumvirate of Jamar Chase and Terrace Marshall and Justin Jefferson. They were targeted 26 times. They made 23 catches for 433 yards and four touchdowns. Tigers did not do like they would have done in the past. Sit on a lead and play not to lose. And that's what I love about this team more so than any other. Man, they play to win. They're going for the jugular. They're not letting their foot off the pedal. They're going. We're playing to win, not playing not to lose like another coaching regime always played like. Oh, my gosh, it is so good to see. Yes, it is so good to see. Here's Coach O today talking about the win over the Longhorns.
Very pleased with our football team. Total team effort. Can't compliment our coaching staff enough for the game planning. But I want to give the credit to the players. They went out there and got it done in a hostile environment. Give credit to Texas. They're a very, very good football team. They fought the whole way. It was a 60-minute game, which we knew it was going to be. Some of the things that we're really proud of, 16 explosive plays. Every four offensive plays was an explosive play. Outstanding.
Love how they just keep on keeping on. Much more coming up on the Tigers shortly. The Raging Cajuns opened up at home. They got the win over Liberty 35-14. 46 times they ran the football for a total of 407 yards. Billy Napier today talking about the Cajuns getting back to the ground attack.
Well, I mean, there's no question when you rush the ball that effectively, lots of players are doing their job. You know, certainly up front, I thought we did a really good job covering them up. Very decisive, one-cut, violent, physical runs by the backs, and some of them popped. It may get overlooked, but I thought our receiver group did an outstanding job, you know, blocking the perimeter. Great effort on the backside. You could see on Trey's run in particular, you know, where those guys showed up out of nowhere and made the difference in the run breaking.
Cajuns, get back into action. This is kind of one of those weekends. Texas Southern comes to Cajun Field. LSU hosts Northwestern State. And I've got to admit, I saw a team that they just played and they got beaten by. And I've never heard of this school before and still haven't. It's a school called Midwestern State. Midwestern State. Never heard of them. And they got beat 33-7. This is not about Northwestern State. Nothing against the Demons. I mean, look, LSU plays against one of these in-state schools every year. It's their turn. It's Ed Orgeron's alma mater, all that, and we'll get into details, and we'll talk to some of his former teammates throughout the course of the week. But this is just about LSU trying to figure out what works defensively because, and we'll delve into this, it's great to be 2-0. It's great to be ranked fourth in the country. They've got several weeks ahead of them now where they can get this defense ironed out. They've got Northwestern State Saturday. They go on their road for the SEC opener against Vanderbilt on the 21st. Then they host Utah State on the 28th. Then they have a bye before Florida comes to town. So lots of time to work. LSU has the players and the personnel to get better defensively. Just want to keep this offensive thing going. And this is when you dress everybody and you play everybody. You get your starters out early and you just play everybody. Tonight, the Saints can't afford that. They've got to go out and get a win. We heard Sean Payton talk about opening up on Monday night and what's so great about it. And the Dome is going to be rocking. And, you know, all the talk about Antonio Brown and all the trials and tribulations and troubles. And now he ends up with the New England Patriots. He's a great talent, but there's a lot of baggage with him. Sean Payton talks about the guy that brings no baggage, nothing but production, Michael Thomas.
Well, look, his work week is very, very diligent. He's someone that, man, goes hard. He's a very, I would say, consistent performer. I think that it's very important to him. He's extremely prideful in what he does, and those are all real good traits.
Tonight, early start, 6:10, Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Saints trying to make it a wonderful, wonderful weekend wrap-up. We saw Serena Williams go down at the U.S. Open, saw Rafa Nadal beat Medvedev in a classic five-set U.S. Open men's singles title. We saw a couple of broken clavicles in the NFL. We saw the New England Patriots not skip a beat. And we saw the NFC South, the Saints haven't played a game yet, and they lead by one game as the Panthers, the Falcons, and the Buccaneers all lost yesterday. But we've got to focus in on LSU, what a matchup it was. My buddy Brooks Cabina of The Advocate will join us next. It was defense early, two goal line stands that weathered the storm, and then it was Joe Burrow. Wow. SEC Offensive Player of the Week for the second week in a row. And he's got to be consideration. heaven forbid, for the Heisman Trophy after two games. We'll talk about it next here on the Jordy Helper Show. And as they all say, what a great time to be a Tiger. We'll be right back.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Huntberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Joe made some throws and some tight windows, man. He was right on the money. So it was a combination of, you know, we work red zone three times a week now. And tight red zone. We've spent a lot of time on it as far as scheme-wise and what we're going to do. It's not about what the defense is going to do. So we have a great plan. We have a great quarterback that can do it. The protection was there. We have receivers that can catch the ball.
Woo, baby, you ain't just a whistling Dixie. Welcome back to the Jordy Helpert Show. Joe Burrow threw two games, 54 of 66 attempts, 9 touchdowns, and 81.8 completion percentage. Don't wake me up. But Brooks Cabina of the Advocate is kind enough to join us. Wow, Brooks, I tell you what, it was defense early with two goal line stands, and then it was an offense, and they just never let up, and they played to win. They did not play not to lose, and that's what I love about this team so far. Good afternoon.
Yeah, both teams played not to lose. Both Herman and Ogeron at the beginning, Texas went for it twice on fourth down, like you said, and over on the other end, they're wondering if they were too more aggressive. And then for Ogeron and them, they had that chance at the end where they were up and with 4 minutes, and Ed Ogeron went to Steve Ensminger and said, hey, should we run a four-minute offense? And, you know, you remember how some of that used to go at LSU, and
yes.
Ensminger kind of changed the philosophy. He's like, no, screw it, we're going to go. And they went down and scored. And the thing about that is we now have the ability to look back, you know, at this game. And at the time, you know, we all know Joe Burrow made probably what will be a season-defining play. The last year it was the 71-yard touchdown to Derek Dillon against Auburn.
Correct.
That brought them back and led to the Colt Tracy field goal. That play may define the season this year, the third down throw he fed to Justin Jefferson for the 61-yard touchdown, the go-ahead out-of-reach score. But that was 3rd and 17.
Yes.
So there might be some people out there that say, well, you know what? Maybe going fast wasn't going to work. You're in 3rd and 17, and then if you didn't get it, you're punting, and now Texas has the ball. So there are two sides to everything, and it just worked out. And it kind of complements that they decided to do that because they have confidence in the quarterback and the offense to make that kind of stellar play. So definitely nothing as related to what we've seen in the past couple of years from this LSU football team.
It just gives you ultimate confidence in your offense to do that. There's no question, and they deliver. So it looks great when it's successful. It can be second-guessed forever. But what made it – I mean, it's just the scheme. You got three receivers all over 100 yards. And LSU used to send a guy long and send another guy on that same side of the field short, and that was all they had. Now I've seen guys crisscrossing. I saw Jefferson run from the left hash and catch one all the way on the right sideline. Boy, it's just it's a whole new deal.
Yeah, the spacing is what makes this offense so powerful with its wide receivers. And we've talked about this before in the summer and even in the spring when they were implementing this. This was how they were going to play it. They were going to whenever Joe Brady first came to LSU, he hosted a coaching clinic within the basketball stadium at the BMAC, and he was telling all the high school coaches, he didn't talk about the run-pass option, he didn't talk about the offense, he talked about spacing. He talked about wide receiver spacing. How much room do you have on the field? Where can things go? How do you open up the field? And that's exactly what you're seeing play out here the past couple of games. And, they move across the field, and that makes it difficult for defenders to follow and track and be around. And I think we just mentioned the 61-yard touchdown by Justin Jefferson. He was crossing the field, and whenever he caught the ball, he forced Texas's safety, a guy that could be a top NFL draft pick, Caden Stearns. into a bad angle, and he beat him on the sideline and went for the touchdown. I mean, that's what spacing does. Caden Stearns is a heck of a defensive back, and just by being in the right position and running the right play and making the right throw, they were able to make a game-breaking play in a big-time ball game. So all those things that they talked about over the past year now are starting to show up on the field.
Burks Cabina of the Advocate, LSU with the big win, 45-38. They moved up to number 4 in the AP poll. You're a voter. Where did you have LSU this week?
I have them at 3. I voted.
I'm with you.
I voted Clemson. I voted Alabama. I voted LSU. And there's some that actually, there were 2 AP voters who actually placed LSU at number 2. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we're there as voters yet to vote LSU there. Because Alabama hasn't proven any differently that they're anything other than the championship contender that they've been the past 10 years. I do think Ohio State is a very strong team. I have them at 4. I think they've done all they need to do to prove that they can be a playoff team so far. It's just they haven't done it against a top 10 opponent. I think this was a big win for LSU. They deserve to be in the top 3. And as the season progresses, we'll start to see the others fill out, the Georgias and the Oklahomas. A lot of people are still confident that those teams are as strong as they were last year. And I feel like LSU's shown what they need to do. And I don't think it was an overreaction at this point to place them that high.
I think if LSU had gotten one more stop and had won it 45-31, I think you would have seen more and more voters at the number 3 spot. But the defense gave up 530 yards. Coach O today talked about being on the field an awful lot. LSU scored very, very quickly, and sometimes that's when you play devil's advocate like that. Sometimes your defense is on the field a long, long time. What was Texas doing? Coach O said we just couldn't stop them. What were they doing?
I mean, we talked about the LSU offense and how it's good at spacing and with an elite quarterback and elite wide receivers. Texas does the same thing. Sam Ehlinger threw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns and no picks. If they had won, we'd be talking about him in the same sense as a Heisman contender, and they just lost the football game. I think the spacing and the wide receiver talent that they had gave LSU the same problems, and they're a very talented football team. And I think what you saw sometimes, even from Christian Fulton, whenever he was placed one-on-one with Brennan Eagles, who was turning into a very good wide receiver for Texas, he misread a play at the very beginning, 55-yard touchdown that gave Texas its one and only lead of the game. He tried to cut it short, jump up, and bat it down, and he just misread the play and didn't get a very good jump off of 1 foot, and you know, his aggressive move cost the defense a touchdown. And I think the more that we dig into it this week, you'll see, that Texas had a pretty good game plan against LSU was bringing. They were able to neutralize LSU as a 4-man rush. Caleb on Chason could not get off the left edge against Cosme, right, the left tackle for Texas. And they had to get creative to stir that up. And if you'll notice, they also threw screens toward Kalavon the other way. They were cutting him down. They were getting around him. They spaced out well and game planned well against the Rams defense. And I think what we saw is just, two teams that game planned very well against each other. And I think we both I don't know if it's over a reaction or not, but the last time they gave LSU up 400 yards of passing offense was back in 2011. Against West Virginia, and
that's
that team
true.
Is arguably the best defense LSU ever had. So, sometimes it's just the way the game flows. And I think, not to use another Texas metaphor, but I mean, whenever they played against USC in the national championship, like when Ed Orgeron would be familiar with this, it was a low scoring game at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of the half. Also, all of a sudden it's off to the races and it's 41-38. Sometimes games break out in that sense, and I think last year when you think about LSU giving up 300 yards of passing offense to Louisiana Tech, Texas did the same thing the week before. Sometimes it just becomes a track race, and as I wrote on Sunday's paper, Joe Burrow just beat Sam Ehlinger at his own game.
And I thought whichever quarterback played the best, that team would be the team that won, and although they both played great, Burrow was just a little bit better. We're talking with Brooks Cabina of The Advocate. No Glenn Logan, no Rashard Lawrence this week. They've been ruled out by Coach Orgeron. Kalyvon Chaisson says he's going to be in a boot today. So this isn't about who you're playing. They can sleepwalk and beat Northwestern State, and they probably will sleepwalk a little bit. But this is when you open up the chamber and let everybody play.
Right. I think what you're going to see this week is a lot of what you saw in the preseason. A lot of guys getting held out. Kalyvon Chaisson, it sounds like it's the same thing that he had in the preseason. And, you know, just kind of nursing that and letting it get healthy. And with Rashard Lawrence and them, Rashard, obviously, as you saw on TV, got his ankle kind of twisted up. Looked like he got a little sprain there. And, I mean, what is it? You know, you give a this Northwestern State is an 0-2 FCS program that just lost to Midwestern State, which I had to Google to find out that that's in Texas.
I've never heard of them.
You know, it's kind of a joke of a game, and I can say that because I'm on the outside. I mean, we can be honest about this. They should be able to show up and snap the football and get 4 yards. So
it'll be the smallest crowd of the year in Tiger Stadium. My last question before we get out of here is, did they have to give the band members IVs at halftime for being up in the nosebleeds like they were?
Oh, man. You know, so I graduated from the University of Texas, and I remember when I was in school, that's where everybody got placed. That's where the away fans got placed, where the away band got placed. They stuck them up way up high, out of the way. And also today, so, you know, Ed Orgeron confirmed that they didn't have AC in the visiting locker room. They actually called Louisiana Tech, and they tipped them off and said, yeah, it was hot. They didn't have any air, so they brought blowers and were a little bit cooler than Louisiana Tech was. And Orgeron said that it wasn't – he didn't think it factored into the cramps in the second half, but more so that they felt like – and Ed said this after the game, too, is when I asked him about the cramps, he's like, well – you know, we thought we needed IVs, but then we got to halftime. It looked like we were okay, and we didn't do it. And if LSU had lost that game, that would have been an interesting thing to look back at.
Yeah, it was a heck of a game. Must have been a great environment, and for an LSU fan, that's a sweet, sweet win. All right, you former UT grad, but that's all right. We still love you. It's all good.
Hey, unbiased reporter right here. I do.
That's right. That's right. But we got you, boys. All right, Brooks. Thank you, man. You take care of yourself. We appreciate your time. And next year, I think we need to bring back, like, Red Auerbach from the grave, because he used to do that at the Boston Garden. He'd put heaters in the locker rooms. And I think that's what LSU should do as well when the Longhorns come to town next year. Preview Saints Monday Night Football next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Is there a more iconic sound than that Monday Night Football theme? I mean, seriously, how good is that? Now the Saints open up their NFL season, the 100th edition of the league, tonight against the Houston Texans in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. It's about a 6:10 kickoff, always a doubleheader to start the season on Monday night. The nightcap will be the Broncos and the Raiders. But Bob Rose joins us from Canal Street Chronicles to talk all about this Saints-Texans matchup, brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. It's the dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. Bob, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon to you, Jordy, and all your listeners. I am good, and I'm also glad I'm not the only one walking around humming the Monday night theme to myself.
Oh, that's a great – in fact, Clint, can you just cue that thing up one more time? It gives me goosebumps. Let's just play it one more time, can we? All All right, I love it. I'm ready to play. All right, Bob Rose, talk to me about this ball game. What's intriguing about it to you?
The most intriguing is going to be old school football. I know we live in the fantasy football era, and there are going to be plenty of reasons to pay attention to this game tonight for that purpose. But I think that this game is going to be won or lost at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. The Texans. Deshaun Watson, the Texans quarterback, was sacked 62 times last year, more than any other quarterback, and they got to protect their young signal caller. They added Laremy Tunsil in a trade last week with Miami, and he's a terrific tackle, and drafted two offensive linemen in the first two rounds this past spring. But Houston, this line combination has yet to take the field together.
Right.
So I expect the Saints to not only expect to get pressure with the front four, particularly Cam Jordan, but expect Dennis Allen to run a lot of more complicated stunts. And when he does blitz, and we know he likes to, he's going to bring pressure on the inside to test those two rookie offensive linemen. And on the other side of the ball, J.J. Watt versus either Teron Armstead or Ryan Ramczyk. That's going to be must-see TV. And we know that the Saints like to perform best when they run a quick rhythm, well-timed passing attack. And J.J. Watt, the last time these guys played, which I grant you hasn't been since 2015 in the regular season, but Watt single-handedly wrecked their game plan. All eyes are going to be on him when the Saints have the football.
Saints have a track record of getting out the gates slowly. They haven't won many season opening games, so tonight is a great opportunity for that. You talked about the pass rush with Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson is one of those quarterbacks. He can make you miss, make you look pretty bad if you got, we call it in basketball being under control. So Marcus Davenport always goes up against the left tackle. Cam Jordan goes up against the right tackle. Where do you see the advantage in this thing for the Saints?
I think Cam is going to have a big advantage on the right side of the Texans line for exactly the reason that you just mentioned. Their right tackle, Chantrell Henderson, he's a good run blocker, and people forgot how well the Texans ran the ball last year. But he struggles against more athletic pass rushers, and you don't get much more athletic than Cam. Marcus Davenport, you and I have talked about it numerous times,
yes,
and people keep
yes.
waiting for him to turn on the switch. Tunsil is a terrific left tackle. So on paper, that advantage seems to be towards the Texans. But, hey, look, there's a reason why the Saints gave up so much to move up and get Davenport, and it was because of his raw physical talents. And he needs to start turning on those talents sooner rather than later. And like you said, Watson is an extremely mobile quarterback. He moves around in the backfield to try to look to make plays in the passing game before he'll just take off and run. So it'll be up to Cam and Davenport to not only beat their blocking, but stay disciplined, and don't let Watson break containment. And that's going to be the key. Also to how well the secondary will play. We know they have talent back there, but we also know that they struggle with communication issues. And if Watson gets to moving around, that spells disaster for down the field and trying not to give up big plays.
Kiko Alonso makes his debut for the Saints. Listen in real quick. Mm-hmm. Sean Payton talked about Alonso's role in the game tonight.
Well, look, he's smart and someone that, our job is to get players ready. And we'll see on Monday, what, if any, kind of role we have.
What kind of role do you think he does have? What is his strength as a linebacker?
Definitely playing against the run and just going to get the ball carrier. Kiko's weakness, as it were, is often at the point of attack or moving around in space when it comes to pass coverage. But he didn't have the line in Miami in front of him that he will in New Orleans. And, yeah, I know Onyemata and Rankins are going to miss this game, but the Saints still have an incredibly talented and pretty deep front four, especially when it comes to to defending the run. So I think, and I had to laugh at the soundbite because, Sean, as we always expect from Coach Payton, it sounded like he was being a little bit coy there. It sounded to me like he does have a specific plan.
He is Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles, kind enough to join us. Watson has a pretty good target. This is another test to the Saints secondary, and particular Marshawn Lattimore. If he can get back to that the ways of his rookie year, I feel pretty good about this Saints team.
Yeah, absolutely. And even though Lattimore didn't play up to his rookie performance last year, I think by the end of the season, Marshawn was still showing us that he was one of the better cover corners in the league. But what was interesting, they moved to they being the Saints defense, moved Lattimore a lot more as a rookie than they did last year. When they came into the 2018 with that same sort of strategy, often trying to lock up Lattimore with the opponent's best receiver, I'm not going to say it backfired, but Lattimore struggled a little bit. He played a lot better once they traded for Eli Apple, and they just put Apple on one side, Lattimore on the other, and whatever receivers were there would be the ones that they covered. So I'm going to be very interested to see what that secondary game plan is tonight, because not only DeAndre Hopkins, like you mentioned, but the Texans have Will Fuller and just acquired Kenny Stills. So they have a very talented receiving core to test this Saints secondary.
No question about that. Saints on the offensive side of the football. Everybody's going to bracket Michael Thomas. Let's talk about the Saints when they have the football offensively. How do they attack this Houston Texan defense, who was pretty darn good a year ago?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, even though the Texans traded Jadeveon Clowney late in preseason, they still have a lot of talent on that defensive roster, especially in the front seven. I would expect the Saints to come out, and you know, we know that they script their plays. They're going to come out with a quick rhythm, get the ball out of Drew's hands quickly in the passing game, and move Alvin Kamara around the offensive formation, probably to see how the Texans are going to play him. As far as Thomas, like you pointed out, every team is going to bracket him, double, triple coverage him. I'm not worried about Thomas. I would still expect him to have his six or eight catches at least, hovering somewhere around 100 yards. I'm more interested to see how they're going to best utilize Kamara. Whether it's going to be more in the passing game or whether they're going to focus on the run, because against that Texans pass rush, they do need a good run-pass balance. Their first drive or two, it's going to be a quick rhythm attack. I'm not going to say no huddle, because Drew does like to huddle, especially if he notices something in the opposing defense. But they're going to get in and out of that huddle quickly, try to keep the Texans' base defense on the field, because if they do that, Kamara is the ultimate mismatch throughout the league.
I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but the Saints have to play offense like LSU plays offense. Can you believe I'm saying that?
Who'd have thunk it, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, my God. I never have any fears with the Saints when it comes to special teams, but I am curious to see the return game for the Saints.
Yeah, I am too. Deontay Harris really showed us a lot in the preseason. And I know the nickname was originally coined for showing my age a little bit, Dante Hall of the Kansas City Chiefs. Dante Harris looks like the human joystick when he's back there. The only concern that we should have is ball security, something that Coach Payton alluded to with Harris a little bit that drove him sort of nuts. I don't think Deontay put any balls on the ground that cost them, but the first time, if he does that in the regular season, he's going to find a seat on that bench relatively quickly. I'm excited to see what he can do in the return game. He's the most exciting returner that we have seen in quite some time in a Saints uniform.
So the Saints will try to stop their 5-year week one losing streak. I remember they had some bad fortune after bye weeks, and Sean Payton consulted Andy Reid about those teams' bye week woes. At the time, the Saints had gone 0-3 in such games, and then they came back and won after that. So since then, they're 8-2. I wonder what he's got a plan to change things up a little bit. And look, one thing, you can change all the routine. One thing you got to do is you got to protect number nine. You got to keep J.J. Watt off of him. Forget about when you eat your meal or when you arrive. Just keep number nine upright.
Yeah, indeed. And yeah, that's a great recipe for winning a football game right there. And I obviously the Saints know what J.J. Watt can do. He's done it to them before, and there's plenty of film of him doing that to pretty much every team he ever faces. But there aren't many teams with the offensive line that the New Orleans Saints have. I don't expect to see J.J. Watt in one-on-one blocking much of the time. But the Saints offensive line is just so talented. They're kind of, and I'm knocking on wood when I'm saying this, they're coming into the season completely healthy along that starting front five. So what gave the Saints offense so much success last year was that line set the tone and set it early, and just kind of completely dominated other opponents. And you know, they were nicknamed the bullies of the NFL, you know, through the first two thirds of the season. Yeah. I would expect to see that kind of thing again. And these Saints have a chip on their shoulder, no doubt, after the way the last two seasons have finished for them.
They're really good against the run. They have been. The Texans lost their starting tailback, Lamar Miller, to IR following an ACL tear. They've got Duke Johnson now and Carlos Hyde. I guess if you can make them one-dimensional and force Deshaun Watson to be your savior and your guiding light, I really like the Saints' chances. If they can continue to stop the run and make Watson, who's still young, make big plays consistently.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Lamar Miller is a very underrated back. He might not be in the top five or top 10 of NFL backs when you're listing them, but he's been really productive for this Houston offense, so that's a big loss. I've always liked Duke Johnson, even dating back to college, but more for his receiving ability and versatility. Carlos Hyde, he's just a guy. He's not going to take over a ball game, I don't think. So while the Saints defense, I wouldn't expect, are completely discounting the running game, I think they feel pretty good about their chances of making Houston one-dimensional. And like you said, you know, Watson, since he is a young guy, especially if they can pressure him and get guys in his face, Houston's too talented to not make big plays in the passing game. But with that kind of recipe, you shut down the run and pressure Watson consistently. I think that gives the Saints a great chance to make some plays and create some turnovers. And when you have Drew Brees on the other side, that usually ends your day in a W.
It's a very big game for a lot of reasons. One, it's your opener. Two, the Falcons, the Panthers, and the Bucks all in your division lost. So you have a chance to go one up over everybody if you win. We saw the Packers and Bears. That was an ugly offensive display. Then we saw teams like the Patriots just light it up. How do you see this game? What kind of aesthetic beauty is it going to be, and who do you like and why?
I like the Saints, and you know, I predicted with a score of 35-27. As much publicized as the Saints' opening day struggles are, Drew Brees and that offense can still often put points up on the board and control the football. It's been the defense that has struggled. In the last five season openers, the Saints have averaged giving up 35 points a game. You know, while we've talked about Houston being so talented offensively, you're not going to shut out the Houston Texans. But I think that the Saints are going to have a recipe for containing Watson, making Houston one-dimensional like we've been talking about. And offensively, again, you know, and we talked about Watt, but Whitney Mercilus on the other side is a terrific pass rusher too. I think that they're going to set the tone early and take control of the ball game offensively first. We saw the dress rehearsal for this first-string Saints offense against the Jets. And how they were, you know, quick rhythm, getting the ball to your stars, Kamara and Thomas, and now we're going to have Jared Cook finally on the field tonight. They're going to use those guys early. And while the complementary weapons of New Orleans offense is going to have to make plays, I don't think we're going to need to see that until later in the ballgame tonight, because Kamara, Thomas, and probably Cook are going to be a heavy part of the offensive game plan. And to be these guys have a chip on their shoulder, like we mentioned. So I think that they are going to, set the tone with an aggressive play calling script, both offensively and defensively. They're really going to get after Watson and make Houston's offensive line show that they can contain the pressure and protect their quarterback.
And don't ever underestimate a Monday night inside the Superdome. It gets awfully loud. Bob, we'll be watching. We'll be reading your recaps and all, and we greatly appreciate your time. And we'll talk to you next Monday at the same time, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. You guys take care and enjoy the game tonight.
You got it. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. We'll come back. Brought to you, by the way, by Peterbilt of Louisiana. Peterbilt's reigned as America's premium quality heavy-duty truck manufacturer since the company's founding in 1939. Peterbilt's maintained its enviable position as the class of the industry by concentrating on delivering high performance, low maintenance, and extremely durable vehicles that pay off in low operating costs, driver productivity, and high resale value. It's the dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. Peterbilt of Louisiana, with offices in Lafayette, Baton Rouge, Lake Charles, and New Orleans. You can also visit Peterbilt of Louisiana Leasing. Peterbilt of Louisiana, it's how the Tigers travel. Back to wrap up hour number one next.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, 54 minutes after the hour, we get to the Raging Cajuns in hour number two. Back to the running game, and Ross Dellinger will talk all about college football. Clemson with a big win over Texas A&M. They don't play anybody now the rest of the year till they get to the college football playoff. Nick Saban's ticked off about people questioning, ask the media if they would have any more success lining up some non-conference opponents after they beat down poor New Mexico State. But those two get that just kind of by fault because they're the best until somebody beats them, and they get it on reputation. But after that, who's accomplished more this season than LSU? Who's won at a top 10 team in the fashion that they did? And it's ironic that 45-38 win over Texas, Tom Herman recruited Joe Burrow to run that offense at Ohio State. And now Joe Burrow's running that offense at LSU and beating Tom Herman, who is now at Texas. And Herman said after the game he's going to have a heck of a year if he stays healthy. And it's not beyond the realm of possibilities, but just think about this with Burrow right now. With his stats, he is currently number one in the nation in touchdowns. He's number one in NFL rating under pressure. He's number two overall in passer rating. Now, I don't know how much he's going to play against Northwestern State. I don't imagine it's going to be much. You go on the road at Vanderbilt, and stranger things have happened, so you got to be locked in there. And Utah State's not bad. Not bad. But particularly this week, you rest people, you get them ready. Down the road. So you've basically got a bye week this week. No offense to the great folks up there in Natchitoches. Bring your meat pies with you. Get your check and go home. The numbers for LSU against Northwestern State are just, I don't even need to talk about it. It's astronomical. But it's important to Ed Orgeron, who was a four-year starter on the defensive line there. So that's fine. LSU's 11-0 all-time against Northwestern State. First time they played since 2011. LSU won that one 49-3. So it's a glorified scrimmage. Everybody buckle up. Everybody gets to play. Go home. Get it over with. All right? Get it over with. Hour number one's over with. The Cajuns get a win. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the college football world, Michigan. Ooh, ooh. Some people are saying, fire Jim Harbaugh, hire the Army coach. I don't know. We'll talk all about it. Hour number two, next. The Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. How about them Tigers? Woo-wee! Playing the...
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle!
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Holtberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two, and away we go. Happy Monday, the ninth day of the ninth month of the year 2019. LSU 45, Texas 38. LSU moves up to number four in the AP poll, number five in the coaches poll. Up next, Northwestern State, the Demons. The Raging Cajuns get a win over Liberty. Up next, Texas Southern comes to Cajun Field. And tonight, the Saints get underway with their NFL season as they host the Houston Texans, 6:10 kickoff on Monday Night Football in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. So far a great weekend. The Saints can cap it all off, put the cherry on top with a big win tonight. Let's do like we always do at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around a busy sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, busy weekend. The Tigers were great. The Cajuns did what they had to do. What you got today, my friend?
Jordy, we got a lot to get to. And, of course, now some breaking news kind of just popped up mere moments ago during the commercial break involving...
Antonio Brown's a Saint.
No. He's officially with the New England Patriots, hashtag as expected. We'll get to that in a little bit. But athletic director Len Swann has officially resigned. This has kind of came down in the last 5 minutes or so. Definitely a big shock to the system. But it feels like maybe, just maybe, what we're seeing right now at USC, not exactly the best of times.
I'm surprised he lasted as long as he did, to be quite honest with you. He had alienated himself to many of the important power brokers at that university. And he made some decisions that did not go very, very well. So it doesn't surprise me at all that he is gone. Now the question is, who comes in? And if you, Clay Helton's got to be on pins and needles.
Oh, exactly. He's just waiting to see the next kind of big ball to drop, Jordy. But flipping it on over to the NFL, we talked about it with Antonio Brown and his antics. I said it on Friday's show, wound up coming a little way earlier than I expected it. On Saturday morning, like at 10:57 at the end of hour one of Under the Dome, we saw Antonio Brown get DOS boot. But instantly, he winds up going to the New England Patriots. Are you surprised in the slightest?
He's a genius. I'm telling you, this thing, it seems like it was scripted. How quickly did he put out that incredible video, highly produced video with the phone conversation of John Gruden? It's like he already had this stuff already planned in advance, and I'm starting to think that he's got some pretty good advisors. He saw that the Raiders were terrible. He said, let me get out of here. Let me force their hand. And look, New England was wanting to trade to get him from Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh said, we're not going to trade you to our enemy. We'll send him somewhere else. And he ends up right where he wants to be. Now, look at the wide receiver. This is the most talented New England team that they've ever had. Look at the wide receivers they've got. Edelman, Josh Gordon, now Antonio Brown. Demarius Thomas. My God, Tom Brady must be going, ha, 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 thank you. They're scary good.
Oh, they're scary good, Jordy, and they looked even better without him in their season opening game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It just felt like we just wound up seeing what's going on with the Steelers post Antonio Brown, post Le'Veon Bell. Maybe Mike Tomlin is going to be on the hot seat by the end of the year.
You think Bill Belichick getting ready to play, and he's watching the teams in his division? How bad are the Dolphins? They're going to lose every game.
Yep.
The Jets and the Bills, they stink. I mean, he has another division title, another bye. It's so easy for the Patriots. So easy.
And, you know, you brought up the Miami Dolphins, Jordy. Heads up, I want to file a waiver claim in your name for Marquise Hollywood Brown, because that dude was absolutely feasting on that offense.
Not a bad rookie. But, again, it's the Dolphins.
You're right. It is the Dolphins.
It's the Dolphins.
But still, it was just refreshing to see, to say the very least. But now let's flip it on over, Jordy, going back to what everybody and their mama has been talking about, and that is LSU and their dominant performance. It was a dogfight, and LSU came away with it, an aggressive performance all the way around against the Texas Longhorns. Jordy, is Joe Burrow a legitimate Heisman Trophy contender in your eyes?
After 2 weeks, absolutely. Absolutely. The numbers do not lie. 54 of 66, 9 touchdowns, a completion percentage of 81.8%. Number one in the nation in TD passes. Number one in NFL rating under pressure. Number two in passer rating, and he won against a top 10 team on the road. Yes, no question. And that 3rd and 17, man, I've never seen LSU have an offense like this, ever. And it's so fun to see it. It's refreshing. It's great. Joe Brady for president.
Joe Brady for president. I'd have to agree with you. I think a lot of people would agree with you. And again, I think many of the beat writers around the state of Louisiana rejoicing right now, because this came out as well a while ago about LSU. Not this weekend, but next weekend they'll be up in Nashville, Tennessee, more specifically Vanderbilt, for that road matchup. And they're all excited because it's an 11 a.m. kickoff on Saturday,
beautiful,
September 21st. How much are you looking forward to that? You have 11 a.m. and LSU Vanderbilt, and you know that's going to be an absolute demolishing of the Commodores.
Get it over with. Yep.
And then
get
you
it over with
have,
and watch the other games.
Yep.
Yes.
It's so good.
And the players and the coaches all love it because the players get home at a reasonable hour. They can go out with their girlfriends and go have some fun. And
especially in Nashville.
Oh, no, they'll be flying home right after the game, big guy. They'll be back in Baton Rouge by 7 o'clock at night, and the night is theirs, and the coaches can go and take their wives to dinner, and it's good. It just goes to show you that they don't think that's going to be that very close of a ball game. They're going to blow them out, and that's good. Anytime you go on the road and get it over with, that's great.
Exactly, and just a couple more. Flip it over to the NFL side of things. Former LSU Tiger Darius Geis, a tough break for him, suffered a knee injury during the week one loss, and according to Ian Rappaport, he'll likely miss some time, but the hope is he underwent an MRI, and the hope is the former Tiger does not need surgery. He just can't get right, man.
No, he can't get right. DJ Chark makes his first touchdown reception as an NFL player, and that's the play that Nick Foles gets hurt on. He's done for the year. I feel for Darius Geis. My goodness gracious. And I just want to know, Odell Beckham, he drives up in an orange Rolls Royce, and he's wearing an orange watch during the game.
That was amazing.
It costed about $250,000. Now, isn't it a contact sport? You get hit by helmets. I mean, I guess he doesn't care. Why are you wearing a watch on the field? That's crazy.
That was the most amazing thing I had seen, Jordy. Considering the fact that, you know, it was weird for me on Sunday, this is the first time I had a full-blown experience of what NFL Red Zone brings to the table. It was free this weekend. Uh-huh. Oh, man.
You love it?
I was losing control of everything because it was just the whip-around coverage is something else. Being able to see every touchdown and seeing the antics that were going on during the Jacksonville-Kansas City game. Oh, it was pure bliss to kind of start off the 2019 season. I'm not paying for it, but still.
No, I understand. I got to ask one question. How can a watch cost between $250,000 and $300,000? What does that watch do that my Timex doesn't do? My Timex tells me the time. It's spot on all the time. I don't understand it. Oh, well.
I don't understand it either, Jordy, but you got to think, that much money being thrown for a watch, you can about imagine that thing's got tons of diamonds and all this other stuff to make it worth that much money. But it was just ridiculous to see him rocking the...
They got their butts handed to him, too. I loved it. Go back home, Cleveland.
Go back home. Well, they were at home, and they want him just getting absolutely
stay at home.
Demolished. Jeez. I mean, Jordy, we might as well just trade off a lot of those guys over to Miami Dolphins, because the Dolphins players reportedly were wanting to be traded after that loss. That was the most hilarious thing I had seen last night.
What's more crazy? Players, after one game, wanting to be traded from the Dolphins, or players wanting to stay and play for the Dolphins after one game?
I think
who wants to play for that? Who wants to be on that train wreck?
Oh, I can about it. That definitely seems like nobody wants to be part of that train wreck. You could definitely say the same thing about the Tennessee Volunteers, 0-2 for the first time, if not mistaken, since 1988. And Jerry Pruitt used a bit of a Titanic reference for some of the teams, for some of the players that have bailed out. And he said, I think Titanic came out maybe when I was in college. When the boat starts going down, remember all the mice running to the top? We have had a few that left our program, but you will figure out who wants to be a Tennessee Vol and who doesn't. I can tell you this. I want to. I know the standards and expectations that we have and the men on our staff and the character that we have. You will see the best players at Tennessee throughout the year. Not exactly the best take.
There's already rumblings. You know who the athletic director at Tennessee is, don't you?
Papa Phil Fulmer.
Phil Fulmer. He may be AD/football coach. They may fire Pruitt. At 0-2, ain't nobody going to those games.
I was thinking about this over the weekend.
They stink. There's your hot topics for the day. Well done, CD. We could talk forever about we got to get good. We have to get to the Raging Cajuns next. And of course, hot topics is always brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring some Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef. On it. Cajuns get back to the ground attack just in time. Win number one, Nick Fontenot of the Daily Advertiser joins us next to talk all about it.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 35-14, the final score. The Raging Cajuns get a win over Liberty. Nick Fontenot of the Daily Advertiser, kind enough to join us to recap the ball game. Nick, good afternoon. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, Jordy. How about yourself, man?
Terrific. Liberty got on the board early. They had a 7-0 lead. Was the crowd like, whoa, what's going on here?
Oh, yeah. It seemed like it was going to be a bit of a shootout there because Liberty got off to a great start, a very methodical drive. I think they got 6 first downs on 8 plays, drove 75 yards. It looked like they were just going to do that all night. And then the Cajuns fired back. It was 7-7, and then Liberty scored again. It was 14-7. Yeah. All of a sudden, you're thinking, wow, it's going to be a shootout. And that's one thing that Napier said was that, you know, they have to try to eliminate the slow start. They started slow against Mississippi State. I think it might have cost them a chance to win the game. They started slow here and allowed Liberty to get on top early. And then they had to kind of play catch up, and then from there, after Liberty had the 66-yard touchdown run, after that they shut them down. They got like 138 yards for the rest of the game, and they didn't score any more points. So you know they have to eliminate the slow start if they want to be successful come Sun Belt Conference play, and that's one thing that I think Napier is going to be concentrating on this week in practice.
Nick Fontenot, the Daily Advertiser. The Raging Cajuns will get back in action again this Saturday at home. Texas Southern comes to town for a 6:30 kickoff. They went back to what we had talked about earlier. You got three really good running backs. Use them. They ran the ball 46 times for 407 yards. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the running backs were as advertised. You know, Trey Regis had like 100 yards, and Ray McCallie had more than 100 yards, and even Elijah Mitchell got in there with 75. You had some other guys get in there. Levi Lewis ran a 19-yard touchdown. You know, I think that their identity is a running football team. And, you know, Levi Lewis, his arm is, you know, not quite where we need it to be. His confidence in the pocket is not quite where you like to see it. So why don't you just hand it to those three guys in the backfield and let them do their thing? I think that's what they finally started to do against Liberty. And all three of them were having great success, you know, knocking off big chunks. I think Regis had a 70-yard run. Kylie had a 66-yard run. So, you know, they were getting big chunks and running the ball for lots of yards at a time. Just give those guys the ball. I mean, you got three options. You can keep them fresh and show their capability of what they're able to do Saturday night when they ran for over 400 yards. So, you know, you got those three guys back there. You might as well use them.
And it put Levi Lewis in favorable down and distance situations. Heck, he was 16 of 25 for a 186. I think Billy Napier will take that every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Absolutely. You can say what you want about, you know, Lewis and his struggles, but you look at that stat line, I mean, not a lot of people are talking about that. He had a tremendous game, you know, and he's thrown the ball up to Jamarcus Bradley. Jamarcus Bradley went for more than 100 yards and a touchdown. So, you know, he has playmakers that he can utilize, but I think it starts with the run game. And just like you said, the run game set up that intermediate passing game. He was able to throw the ball and hit the playmakers, and he was able to have a good game. So I think that's what they have to do is concentrate on the running back, get the running backs going, and then that allows him to find the playmakers out in the open.
Nick Fontenot, the Enterprise, they only had to punt the ball one time, but those turnovers keep coming back. They had an interception. They put the ball on the turf twice, lost one fumble. That was the major point of emphasis after the week one loss to Mississippi State. Not as much. It certainly didn't hurt them, but come conference play, man, they gotta value that football a little bit more.
Yeah, the mistakes are what's killing them. And, you know, against Mississippi State, it was penalties. They had a couple of personal foul penalties and turnovers as well that really cost them in this game. You know, they did turn over the ball, and they got to take care of it. And another thing that is kind of questionable right now is the kicking game. You know, they had three missed field goals from Stevie Ortiz. He had some struggles last year as well. He seems like he hasn't figured it out. He's kind of struggling again this year. Napier doubled down, though. Napier said he's going to stick with Ortiz in the kicking game. So, you know, it's just a bunch of mistakes that they need to clean up. And they're definitely not a finished product. They have a lot of positives they can take away from their first two games, but I think there's a lot of work to be done there.
We got a soundbite from Billy Napier earlier today. You were there. Clint was there. The next opponent is Texas Southern from the SWAC. And Billy Napier had this to say about Texas Southern coming to Cajun Field.
Yeah, no, there's no question. This team that we play, Coach McKinney and his staff, they've done a terrific job. You can see, I mean, we've watched their personnel from last year. They've made significant progress in their offseason in the first two games. They're much more disciplined. They're playing with really good effort. And they've got some skill players where they can score on you in a hurry. You know, we're talking about a quarterback that played at Florida State, a couple receivers that played at Michigan State, Baylor, Texas State. You know, they've added probably six or seven transfers to their team that makes them really talented. So, you know, they've got their weapons, and we're going to have to be well prepared to defend.
That was Billy Napier at his press luncheon today. Did you see improvement from the Cajuns defensively from week one to week two?
Definitely. They had great pressure on the quarterback. Chauncey Manak had a pair of sacks. Joe Dillon got one. They were able to disguise their defense all around, where every time they were stunting and blitzing, it looked exactly the same as when they weren't, and that's a huge key, as you know, for a defensive unit to be able to do that. So, you know, they're getting better. I think Coach Ron Roberts is really instilling his his plan. I think maybe in that first year, it was a struggle. He was trying to find the right personnel. A lot of the guys were hurt. Now he's got guys like Joe Dillon back, Michael Jacquet, who's just an unbelievable athlete. And, of course, Chauncey Manack came on, and he's having a good year. So, you know, Zion Hill's running all over the field. They have a lot of athletes on defense, and Ron Roberts is finally getting to implement what he wants to do on defense and is showing up in the game.
Shut them out in the second half on, en route to a 35-14 win over Liberty. The big topic of conversation prior to the game was the medical chair for Hugh Freeze. Did you sneak in there and sit down in it before he got there? Come on, be honest with me, Nick.
No, I wanted to. I wanted to see what the setup was like. And I actually rode the elevator up with, I believe it was either his daughter or a couple of young ladies that were going up to his box. So I didn't ask them, you know, what was going on or where they were going, but they had the Liberty passes and the coaches passes. So I don't know what they were doing, but no, I did not get a glimpse of what Hugh Freeze was set up like.
He's 0-2 as calling the shots as an offensive coordinator. He was shut out in the first game, only scored 14 in this one. So I'm telling you, Hugh, just be the figurehead. Let somebody else run the show. But certainly the Cajuns took care of their business. How are they health-wise after two games?
You know, they didn't lose anybody in this game. It's still the same injuries that were coming from last game. You know, Ken Marks is done. Okay. You know, and a lot of the tight end issues they're still having. But, you know, all of the positions that they had injuries at, they had a lot of depth, and it seemed like they're going to be okay. And, you know, offensive line, he said they had more than enough players that could come in, play significant snaps, and play winning football. Mm-hmm. And the tight end side, a lot of youngsters are stepping up and doing a good job. So, you know, they have so much depth at those two positions, it seems like there might have been a couple of the deepest positions that they had, and just so happens to be the position that they're injured at. So, you know, overall, I think it's a pretty healthy team. They do have some significant losses on the line and tight end, like I said, but I think they're going to be okay.
Here's to overcast skies. It was hot at Cajun Field on Saturday. Nick Fontenot, the advertiser, thanks so much for joining us each and every Monday as we recap the Raging Cajuns again. Texas Southern at Cajun Field, 6:30 kickoff. Thanks for the time, my friend. Have a good week.
All right, Jordy, see ya.
All right, we'll take a quick time out here when we come back for his weekly Monday visit. Sports Illustrated's Ross Dellinger. He was shocked at LSU's performance. Where does he have the Tigers ranked nationally? That story next.
The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Burrow with the snap. Here comes the blitz. Burrow steps away from it. Throws. Catch made! Justin Jefferson has it at the 38. Racing down the far line. Sideline. 10-5. Touchdown, Tigers! 61-yard touchdown reception. The Longhorns unleashed in the offensive backfield. Burrow stepped to his left. And then almost with a jump, able to toss it up. Jefferson has it. Had the first down, but said, I'll take it on to the house.
That coming on a 3rd and 17, I could just imagine if another coach had been on that sideline, they'd have handed the ball off and kicked it away and hope and pray your defense can make a stop, which they couldn't. But LSU just played to win. Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated joins us each and every Monday at this time of day. How about them apples, Ross? Can you believe it?
Yeah, it was pretty incredible, and I don't think there's anything. You know, there's a lot of different. There was a lot of evidence Saturday that LSU's offense has changed, but I think the biggest evidence and proof was what you just played. It was under 4 minutes left. Not just that one play, but that whole series. You know, under 4 minutes left, backed up in your opponent's territory, nursing a 6-point lead. And you throw it 5 times and you run it once. That should tell you a lot about kind of the mentality change, not just the offensive schematic change, but just the mentality change that these coaches have.
It's amazing. Joe Burrow's put up incredible stats, nearly 82% completion percentage, leads the country in touchdown passes. Is he a Heisman candidate in Ross Dellinger's book right here, right now?
I think he's got to be up there in the top. I know the new Heisman odds, I think, came out this morning. I believe he was listed, as one of them. So, it's obviously early in the season. I remember the few years ago when Fournette was number one in odds in the September. They always give away that who's the September Heisman winner. So, and then Fournette, of course, never even made it to New York that season, despite having – being number one all September. So it matters in the, it matters in those big games late. That's how you kind of win the Heisman, like Kyler Murray did in the Big 12 championship. It really matters late in those mid to late November, early December games. So those are going to be the big ones, obviously. You circle the game like Alabama and all those games are going to be even bigger.
No question, but I mean, in a small sample size, if you had to stop it today, he'd have to be there. Plus, if you stop the season today, where would you have LSU ranked nationally? You've watched games. You see all these teams play. They go on the road. They beat a top 10 team in Texas, packed house. They do it offensively. What do you think of the Tigers so far?
Well, I mean, obviously, really, really impressive. I think there probably is a little concern. I know there's some concern with the fan base about the defense, but when you play that kind of offensive game where you're scoring really quick, I mean, one drive LSU scored in 26 seconds on Saturday. Your defense is going to be on the sideline with a breather only a short period of time, and I think that's part of kind of a product in a way of playing this kind of game and playing this kind of offense. Mm-hmm. And a lot of old school coaches, like, for instance, Les Miles, will tell you that that's probably why they never went to that offense. But when you have players like Joe Burrow and a lot of receivers like they have, talented receivers, it's so hard not to play this type of game when you have just so many weapons. And, we're seeing kind of, in a lot of ways, a historical shift, in LSU offensively. Mm-hmm. And the bad byproduct might be a little more points given up because, number one, your defense is not sit on the sidelines as long. And, number two, you get into – if you're scoring a lot of points and scoring quickly, well, that forces the other team – to start being a more aggressive themselves. And so they're going to be more aggressive. So I think that's what we saw from Texas, in the second half.
I think LSU fans will take that. I think this is a new, fresh beginning. And it's so ironic in that Tom Herman recruited Joe Burrow to Ohio State to run that offense that Joe Burrow's now running at LSU to beat Tom Herman at Texas.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of funny. Burrow was asked about that after the game. It's funny. He said something like, it's funny how the world works. It comes kind of full circle. You're playing against the guy who recruited you in an offense that he recruited you for at a program that had never really run anything like that. And, I did a story on Burrow over the summer, and I talked to his dad, Jimmy, the former Ohio defensive coordinator. And we talked that during the recruiting process, during the Burrow's recruiting process to LSU, he visited LSU in Cincinnati after leaving Ohio State. And, they were negatively recruited, the Burrows were. He said Jimmy Burrow said one assistant coach told him something like, well, you know what you're going to get if you go down to Baton Rouge, you're going to be under center and handing the ball off kind of thing. And, they trusted the LSU coaches who told them we're changing. And Ed Orgeron, he's changed. It's pretty obvious he's kind of followed through on a commitment and a promise that one other not to be named coach never did.
Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, kind enough to join us, is around the league, around the country. Looks like Maryland is legit. 142 points on the scoreboard in two consecutive weeks. You beat Syracuse 63-20. Maryland must be pretty darn good.
Yeah, that was there was a lot of shockers over the weekend for sure. Cal upsetting on the road, upsetting Washington, and the Colorado's big comeback against Nebraska. Yeah. And obviously what happened with BYU in Tennessee. But one of the bigger ones for me was especially from where I live now in D.C., just a half an hour away, is College Park. And they got it rolling offensively. 142 points they've scored in the first two games of the Mike Locksley era. And so I got on the phone with Mike Locksley and Maryland's quarterback after the game over the weekend, kind of for a follow story that you can find at SI.com now about how they've done this. You know, they've kind of shocked the nation with this offense. And, you know, they're running Alabama stuff. He brought over all Alabama stuff, and they watched Alabama film all offseason. And then, of course, they got, just like LSU got, right, they got a transfer quarterback. And that's what we're seeing more and more these days. These coaches are going out and, you know, if they don't have a quarterback they like on the roster, they're going out and getting one, and they're succeeding.
Ross Jones, your Sports Illustrated. What program's in worse state of flux? I mean, Tennessee's 0-2, but they lost to BYU. But Florida State loses to UL Monroe. I mean, wins over UL Monroe, barely. I mean, Willie Taggart, Jeremy Pruitt, who's the first to go?
Yeah, it's man, I did not expect, you know, these teams to be in this situation right now. For sure, Tennessee, I mean, losing to Georgia State and blowing the BYU game, got them kind of backed up inside the 20, leading by three under whatever it was. It was like under 40 seconds to go in the game, and to allow a 60, 70-yard pass. And you know, their head coach is a defensive guy. I mean, Jaron Pruitt came from Alabama where he was defensive coordinator. It's bizarre and just kind of astounding that they're in this position. And, yeah, staying for Florida State, you know, they could have very well lost that game. Blew the 18-pointer at home to Boise State last week and could have very well have lost that game to Monroe if they didn't miss a field goal or miss an extra point. I don't really know what's going on. I don't know if those two programs really are going to pay whatever it is. I don't know the exact amount, but it's probably at least $15, $20 million to get rid of a coach and a staff, you know. And I doubt that happens this season, unless it gets really bad. But I don't know how much worse it can get at Tennessee, losing at home to Georgia State and blowing what they did at BYU. But you look at Tennessee, the rest of Tennessee's upcoming schedule, and it is brutal. I mean, they could very much be at 1-6, 1-7, and then at that point, maybe the athletic director takes over because he obviously, wiggles his way into the AD job. And a lot of people would say he did it so he could maybe one day take over if something like this were to happen.
I'm the one that's agreeing with that one. There's no matchups between top 25 ranked teams this weekend. We can't convince you to come see Northwestern State and LSU eat some meat pies. Where in the heck are you going to be? Maybe Iowa State's the best matchup this weekend?
Yeah, there's no good matchup. It's not great. It's not a great week. I'm actually going to stay home for the first time in a long, long time. I'm trying to remember the last time I stayed home on a college football Saturday. So it's been a while, but I've had a lot of travel the last 6 to 8 weeks. So I'm excited to kind of stay home and watch some of the games because, yeah, it's a pretty weak week of college football. Like you said, that Iowa State match is a big one. You know, Alabama's playing at South Carolina. I mean, I don't expect it to be a good game or anything, but you never know. Virginia is hosting Florida State, but again, we just talked about Florida State's issues. But that's what I'll be watching more so than a lot of others. Seeing Virginia's kind of for real. You know, they won at Pitt a couple weeks ago. They won at William Mary this past weekend. It'll be interesting at home if they can kind of hold serve there with FSU.
Yeah, Ross Dellinger, your Sports Illustrated. Florida at Kentucky was going to be an interesting game until the injury to Kentucky quarterback Terry Wilson. So that certainly takes some luster off that. Maybe we have to just see if the fighting Mac Browns can continue to win.
Yeah, that's right. It's really incredible what's going on over there. Mac Brown and then they have found a way, haven't they, to win close games and to come back, it's really been incredible to see first Miami, then South Carolina. Really, really incredible to see what they've done and what he's already done with the program. I don't even know who they have this week, North Carolina. I'm not even
at Wake Forest.
Sure.
At Wake Forest.
Oh, okay.
At Wake Forest on Friday. At Wake Forest on Friday, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, that should be. And then Wake Forest, they played some good ball lately. They got a great coach who's they're always, seems like they're always in game. So, yeah, that should be a fun one. There's a fun one, too, on Friday. Another fun one on Friday. You know, I believe Washington State plays at Houston. Mike Leach and Dana Holgorsen, two air raid guys, obviously, and best friends will play. That's one that's going to be kind of fun to watch on that Friday night.
He is Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. You get a chance to talk to Matthew McConaughey and hear him whine and cry about his Longhorns, or did you avoid him?
No, I didn't get to talk to him. I know he was on the sideline during the game. He's always confident about his Longhorns, and they did play really well. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this today. I'm not sure I've ever seen LSU win a game, and specifically win a game by scoring that many points while not dominating the line of scrimmage. Because really, Texas, not dominated, but they held the edge in the line of scrimmage battle. You know, Sam Ehlinger had all the time in the world. I mean, I think he was pressured maybe three or four times. And then the opposite, you know, especially the first three or four series for LSU, I mean, Joe Burrow had no time. So, if anything, you know, the offensive line of LSU against the defensive front of Texas was a draw, but the defensive front of LSU versus Texas's O front was not a draw. I mean, Texas fended them off really well, but that should tell you something about the quarterback and the offense, is that they don't have to win the line of scrimmage anymore to win games. And it's a part of the spread offense and the kind of the air raid offense, if you will, just throwing the ball a lot, where when you have a really good quarterback, you don't have to win those anymore, you know? And so that's a real big thing that came out of that game.
No question. Ross, thank you so much. Enjoy a week at home, my friend. And we'll talk to you next week. I don't know what we'll talk about because the games are going to be terrible. Maybe somebody will upset somebody, but we'll see. But all the best. Thank you so much, my friend. Have a good one.
All right, Jordy. See you.
All right, Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. We'll be back after this final timeout. Wrap this thing up. What happened in this day in sports history? Well, the most controversial game in Olympic history. That's a little tease. I'll tell you all about it next.
All the best guests join the Jordy Hultberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. Finishing touches here. Ed Orgeron was asked about today a big picture question. You know, he had losses early on in his tenure to Mississippi State and to Troy in the first year, and people thought, he's not going to last. Recruiting was pretty good early. It's not what it's been like the last couple of years. So Ed Orgeron was asked that question. He said, you know, you got to stick to the plan and believe. Obviously, there were some mistakes made early on, but we got better. We got better. I do believe after the Troy game, we made significant improvement. Our recruiting has gotten better. I have a great coaching staff right now. It took me 2 years to get the coaching staff the way I wanted it. It took us 2 years to get some depth on the offensive line. It took us 2 years to get more receivers that could get the ball. It took us 2 years to get the two running backs that we needed to get in there. Then the big difference that's been in our football team is Joe Burrow, Joe Brady, last year Cole Tracy, and this year Cade York. Those guys have made a significant difference on our football team since I've been here. A quarterback, an offensive-minded coach, and two field goal kickers. It's very reliable when Cade York comes in there, just like Cole Tracy was. Burrow and York named SEC Players of the Week. Burrow for the second week in a row. And York, the special teams player of the week for his excellent performance. He didn't miss a kick, didn't miss a beat. He was terrific. Field goals of 36, 33, and 40 yards long. All right, history lesson time. Here we go back on this day, September 9th. The year was 1972. The Soviet Union beat the United States 51-50 in the most controversial game in international basketball history. With the U.S. leading 50-49, the final 3 seconds were replayed not once, not twice, but three times until the Soviets finally won. The Americans didn't show up for their silver medal. They never accepted them. To this day, we were robbed by the Russians. On this day, September 9th, the year 1972. If today's your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share with the likes of happy 53rd birthday to Adam Sandler, the water boy. Happy 44th birthday to Michael Bublé. Happy 59th birthday to actor Hugh Grant. And happy, I can't believe he's 34 years old now, J.R. Smith, a man without an NBA team. If it's your anniversary today, happy anniversary. I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Have a wonderful day. All right, Saints tonight against the Houston Texans. Monday night in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. You don't go in the dome and beat the Saints on a Monday night. I think the Saints win this one. I think they win by double digits to get their year started off properly. Tomorrow, we'll talk with some people that played with Ed Orgeron back when he was at Northwestern State. We'll recap the Saints and their, we hope, win over the Texans. And we'll preview the Cajuns and Texas Southern. We'll have another busy, busy day planned for you and yours. Special thanks to our guest today, Brooks Cabina of The Advocate, covering LSU. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicle, covering the Saints. Nick Fontenot of The Advertiser, covering the Raging Cajuns. And Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, all things college football. We only have one of these Mondays. 09-09-19. Man, I hope you have a great rest of your afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. CD, job well done. We leave you today to get you ready for tonight with, come on, baby, hit me.